Turn in your Bibles to Ruth chapter 2. We live in a world that's full of emptiness, people that are empty. This last week, my kids came back from school telling stories. One of the things they talked about was, I don't remember which child, but they had a picture of our family that they'd taken to school. And one of their classmates was looking at the picture of the family and said, "That's your family?" Like, it just was surprising. Maybe this child was somewhat envious that, you know, there's a mom and a dad and four kids and they all are together and it seems happy. And to this child that was looking on to this, it was an unusual thing, right? Because so many families in our culture are broken. They have split apart because of the selfishness of one or the other or all. And that, boy, that leaves people with an ongoing emptiness in their hearts, to be split up and reunited and all kinds of different things. We don't realize, for those of us that have families that are all together, what a blessing that is from God. Not only is there emptiness in our world that comes from poor choices, but there's emptiness in our world that just has nothing to do with us. It's just we live in a sinful world, and there's hurt that comes to us. You know, cancer strikes, and sickness comes. And accidents happen, and we go from one day to the next, and it's just, we lose things and people that were precious to us. We live in a world that's full of emptiness. The book of Ruth tells one such story. Last week we studied the first chapter of the book of Ruth. There's this Israelite woman named Naomi who moves with her husband and her two sons to Moab, and when she gets to Moab, everything starts to go horribly. Her husband dies. Her two sons get married, but there's no children that come from them over 10 years being in Moab. And then both of her sons die. So that there's three widows left. Naomi decides to go back to Israel, to her homeland, because she hears there's food there. One of her son's widows stays in Moab, and the other one, despite Naomi's urgings to go back, Ruth says, "No, Naomi, I am going to stay with you. We're going to go into this difficult place together." And so you have walking into Bethlehem these two destitute widows. They used to have lives that were much fuller than this, but now they're empty. They're hurting. Look at how Ruth feels, Naomi feels about this. It's Ruth chapter 1, verse 20. Ruth 1:20. "The people in the town said, 'Oh, Naomi's home.'" Naomi means pleasant. And they said, "Yay, Naomi's home." And here's what Naomi says in response to the people of the town welcoming her back. She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara." It means bitter. "For the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" Naomi feels at this point like God is against her. But God is not against Naomi. He's not against her. In fact, He had already begun at this point, when she's hurting so much, He's already begun to fill her life up again with good things, with things beyond what she can imagine. There's little hints of it already. There's food around them. They're walking home, and it's the time of the barley harvest. Secondly, she does have this daughter-in-law who is committed to her, that's walking alongside her. That's where we stopped the story last time. We're picking it up today in Ruth chapter 1, verse 22. So Naomi returned, verse 22, and with her, Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now Boaz is a new character in our drama. You don't see him in chapter 1, but the narrator wants to introduce us to him before he comes onto the stage. We're not going to meet Boaz for a few more verses here, but he tells us some things we need to know about him. One, Boaz is a relative of Naomi's through Elimelech. Secondly, Boaz is a great man. New American Standard says he is a man of great wealth. That's true, but the Hebrew implies more than that. Some of you probably have different translations. This is a strong word, two strong words that describe him. It's saying that Boaz is strong, he is capable, he's honorable, he's influential. And it kind of raises our hope as we're reading the story. Maybe Boaz is someone who can help these women who are so destitute. But Boaz is not on the minds of these two widows as they sit in their cottage in the town, probably in disrepair, as I imagine it. What's on the minds of these two women? Food, probably. How are we going to provide for our basic necessities? How do you live in a world that's full of emptiness? In this chapter, we have several great examples of how to live in a world filled with emptiness. Ruth is the first one. Ruth is going to give us an example of how to live when we are empty. How do we live out of our own emptiness? When you are empty, we'll see from Ruth, what we need to do is trust in God and take action. That's what Ruth does. Look at verse 2. Ruth takes the initiative. As Ruth and her mother-in-law Naomi had walked in from Moab to Bethlehem, they'd walked through the fields, and she was able to see that harvest was beginning. Prompts action in her mind. Verse 2. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Rich, we have a couple of pictures of ancient barley harvests. Here's one from about 1400 BC. This would be 300 years or so before Ruth's time, from Egypt. But this is kind of cool because it comes from roughly way back in the day, and this is how they would have done this in Bethlehem too. You see the Egyptian harvesters here. There's a bunch of them in the field. They go out, and on the one hand they've got sickles, and on the other hand they keep the grain that they cut. And so they just go along and they're cutting the grain, and they cut the grain with the right hand and stick it in their arm, and they just carry as much of the grain as they can in their left hand. This next picture is pretty cool. This is a picture from 1899 in a field outside Bethlehem where they're doing a barley harvest. So 1899, they probably did the barley harvest just about the same way they did it in Ruth's day. I didn't see this one. I don't have a pointer. See by the man who looks like he's in charge? You see the pile of hay, barley? There's a donkey in there. I didn't pick that up till later. It's like, find the donkey. Where's Waldo? Anyway, this is also the two ladies in the front. You can see that they're passing something between them. It's a water pitcher. But this is how the harvest goes around Bethlehem. Back in Ruth's day, they would go out and then they would bring it in by hand. You can see there's women and men. It seems like the men maybe were the ones with the sickles that would be doing the harvesting of the grain, and then they would set the grain aside in bundles on the ground. The women would come along and they would tie it up, right, and carry it. Well, they've got a donkey to help them, so they tie it to the donkey, and then it needs to be taken into town yet and threshed. This man there standing by the donkey, that might be the Boaz of the field, right? He's overseeing the project, and there's these people working. I think it's kind of a neat picture. This would be hard work, and it would be hot. Well, this is what Ruth is going to do. You can put that down. The laws of Israel made special provisions for the poor, and Ruth is poor. The law was that poor people, if you were a widow, or if you were an orphan, or if you were a foreigner displaced into Israel, so Andy, this would fit you if you get desperate. If you fit into these three categories, then you're allowed to go glean in the fields. But don't think that this is going to be a wonderful opportunity. It's still pretty rough, because gleaning in the fields means you're not going out there as a worker. You're not hired. You don't get pay. You just go out, and as they're chopping down the wheat and they're sticking it under their arms, barley in this case, some of the barley might slip out of their arms, or they might miss a stalk here or there. Some might get left behind. And the law in Israel was that the Israelite farmers were not to go back and pick up what they dropped. So the poor people could follow along after the farmers, and if they accidentally dropped anything, they could pick that up, and then that would be provision for them. There was also a rule about the corners of the field they weren't supposed to harvest. And so this is Ruth's plan. She's going to go glean. She's going to pick up, hopefully there'll be some poor workers in the field that she chooses. They'll drop a lot of grain, right? And she'll have enough for food. But this is, it's not lucrative, right? probably all you could really hope for from gleaning like this would be just enough subsistence food. There, if you work hard all day, you might get enough to eat. It'd be like for us, maybe, okay, I don't have food for my family, so I'm going to go pick up, I'm going to go walk around town and try to find trash that has aluminum cans in it and redeem that. Well, maybe I can get food out of that if I buy ramen, you know, but I'm not going to, no one's going to take this up as a business opportunity. That's how it is with gleaning. It's a provision for the poor, but it's not going to accomplish much other than it's a way to get food. And Ruth and Naomi need food. Acting in faith like Ruth does here, it takes courage. I once had a friend who liked a particular girl, and he liked this girl for all of the right reasons. She was a Christian young woman. It was right that he be attracted to her. He dreamed and talked to me often about how he wanted to marry this girl one day. And, you know, he picked out a great girl to aspire after. But the thing was, time would go by, and he never actually went and talked to the girl. And so I told him, well, friend, you know, if this girl and you were going to end up married, you might have to take some initiative. You might have to, like, ask her out or something. And his response was always, well, I'm waiting for the Lord to open the door. And I was like, okay, but you might have to knock on the door first and then see if the Lord will open it or not. You can't just, like, hope that somehow this is going to work out. It's the same way. It's the same way when we're trusting God. When I say, okay, Lord, I'm going to trust you to provide for me, the right response isn't, okay, I'm going to trust you and I'm going to sit at home. Right? That's not what Ruth does. Ruth is trusting in God, and so she thinks, well, God, take care of me. There's food. So she takes steps to go and provide for herself and for Naomi. This is what we must do. William Carey said, expect great things from God. Attempt great things for God. So acting in faith requires certain characteristics. It requires courage. That's on your handout there. Ruth displayed courage. Look at her words in verse 2. She says to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. You see, by law, Ruth can go and she can pick up the food that's dropped. But the thing is, not all of the farmers around Israel followed the laws. And some of them were mean and they would not let people come and glean in their fields because that means loss for them. Right? As a businessman, you want to maximize your productivity. These poor people following along and picking up your leftovers means you profit less. And so some of the farmers, and throughout the Old Testament, it speaks of they're oppressing the poor people. How do they oppress them? Well, they don't let them glean like they're supposed to. They don't leave the corners of the field. They drive them away. And Ruth knows that this might be the case. And so her hope is that someone might show her favor, that someone might allow her to do what she really has a right to, but there's no policeman out in the fields to be able to glean. And there's another obstacle for Ruth, and she knows it. The narrator hints at it in verse 2. You see how Ruth is described there? As if we forgot. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi. When Ruth gets out to the fields, how can she expect to be greeted? She can expect to be greeted with racial prejudice. The Jews despised the Moabites. The average Israelite could give you a long list of the history that went between these two nations and why we should not treat Moabites well. In fact, even in Deuteronomy 23:6, in God's word, it says, you, to the Israelites, you shall never seek their peace or their prosperity all your days, about Moab. Now, he's talking about the nation, and what he's trying to do is to keep, God is trying to keep a distinction between the pure behavior of the Israelites and the idol worshiping that the Moabites were known for. God doesn't mean by this in Deuteronomy that you should be rude to every Moabite you meet, but many Israelites took it that way. Even God wouldn't want me to be kind to these Moabites. And so Ruth got working against her, the desire of businessmen to make money, and, all, you know, it's all fair in business. I don't know. Right? She's got that working against her, and she also has working against her the fact that she's a Moabite, and it's very likely that people are not going, if they would let an Israelite glean, they're not going to let her glean. But here's the confidence that you can have, believer. If you will trust in your God and take action, God will watch over you. He's not going to leave you with needs unmet. You trust in God and take action, God is going to watch over you. We see that here with Ruth. It's beautiful. So you come to Ruth chapter 2, verse 3. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Did Ruth know where she was going? When she left, did Naomi say, oh, well, you want to go down this road and then turn left and there's going to be Boaz's field over in the corner? No, she just says, go, my daughter. In fact, the narrator goes out of his way to show that this just happened. It says, she happened to come to Boaz's field. In the Hebrew, in that phrase, she happened to come, there's two separate words that indicate random chance. A literal translation of these words might be, her chance chanced upon the field of Boaz. Or, as luck would have it, Ruth stumbled upon the field of Boaz. I think, and then the narrator winks, right? As luck would have it, she came just to the field of Boaz. We're supposed to think, as we read this story, as the Jews would have, wait a minute, do we believe in luck? Doesn't God control all the details of our lives? Proverbs 16:33 says, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. You can take dice, you can roll them out. It comes to a seven. How is it that it came to a seven? Well, you could say, well, it's a probability. Seven's the most likely number to roll. But a biblical perspective on that would be God caused it to roll a seven. He's in control of things. Nothing happens by accident. It's not an accident that Ruth happened to come to the field where Boaz's workers were working. How did Ruth end up in Boaz's field? The real answer is in Proverbs 20:24, where it says, man's steps are ordained by the Lord. So Ruth's walking, her steps are ordained by God to come to Boaz's field. How did he lead her there? God didn't speak to her. She, in this case, didn't have any wise counsel to follow. She didn't have, that we have recorded here, any kind of mysterious vision or warm, fuzzy feeling. She just went to a random field in her mind. But behind the scenes, God directed her steps without her even knowing it. This is the normal way that God works in the life of every believer. Do you believe this? God controls everywhere you go. He controls what you're doing so that he puts you where he wants you to be. He's doing this for Ruth, for her good. You trust in God and take action, and God will put you where he wants you to be. He'll watch over you for your final good. He will direct your steps. And secondly, God will work through things outside of your control. Not only will he direct you as a believer, but God's able to direct unbelievers. He's able to direct nations. He's able to direct all of the details of our lives, and he does for the good of believers. He will work through things outside of your control. We see that in verse 4. Verse 3, she happened to come to Boaz's field. And then verse 4, now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. This narrator is a master storyteller. It's like he says, and what do you know? Who else happened to show up at the field while Ruth was there? Why? It's Boaz! And, you know, like, yeah, somehow we knew this was going to happen. Right? This isn't random chance. God is directing this for the good of these ladies. For Naomi sitting back at the cottage thinking, what's going to happen to Ruth? God is against me. He is directing this for her good. And he's directing it for Ruth's good, as we will find. Notice, believer, if you're empty, God will take care of you. If you're empty, God will take care of you. He has promised to do that, but you have to trust in him and take action. Might require courage. Also, it might require humility and respect. Now, I want to skip down to verse 7. Boaz is showing up. They're going to talk to Boaz, but something happens between Ruth and the people in the field. Before Boaz gets there, we're going to skip down to that. So, verse 7. This is before Boaz came to the field. She gets there early in the morning. And she said to the young man who was in charge of the workers there, under Boaz's authority, please, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came, the worker is telling to Boaz here, thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Ruth goes about this the right way. Ruth really has the legal right to glean in this field. She could just go in there and start doing it. But instead of that, she finds the person who's in charge. And she goes and she asks him, may I glean in your field? She finds the foreman, gets permission. We trust in God. We don't have to be rude or brash or disrespectful to authority to find his will come to us. It's right to submit to authority, to trust in him, to respect other people's property. That's what Ruth does here. Acting in faith requires courage. Ruth sets a good example with her humility and respect. Also, she sets a good example with her hard work. You see that in verse 7? The foreman seems to be impressed with Ruth's work. When Boaz comes, he reports to Boaz, well, hey, she's been here all morning and she's been working and she's only taken one break. She's been in the house for a little bit, but the rest of the morning she was out there working. He gives her a good report to Boaz about the work of this Moabite woman. You cannot take God's promises to care for you as an excuse for laziness, right? How does God care for Ruth? She was courageous. She worked hard with a good attitude, with a humble attitude. And then as she went, God provided for her. How does God care for you? You have to be courageous, work hard with a humble attitude. And as you go, God will take care of you. He'll meet your needs. Ruth provides us with an excellent example of what we should do when we're empty. If you're empty today, look at Ruth's example and follow it. It's a great one. Now, Boaz is going to come along, and he's going to give us an example of how to live in a world full of emptiness when you are full. Right now, Ruth is empty. Boaz is full. He has a field. He has a harvest coming in. He has workers working for him. He's a great man. How does Ruth act? How does Boaz act? Okay, when you're full, reach out to those around you who are empty. We're going to see Boaz do this. First, use your speech to bless others. This is what Boaz does. Go back to verse 4. When Boaz is first arriving at the field, now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. I want to speak the way that Boaz speaks in this book. I just love it. Every time Boaz speaks, there is just grace flowing out from his lips. May the Lord bless you, he says to his workers. How many of you, when you go to work, the boss comes in and says to everyone, may the Lord bless you. And you all respond, may the Lord be with you. But this is how it was. They expected him to talk that way. That's why they were ready with their reply. This isn't, not everyone in Israel talked like this. This is not a godly time in Israel. But Boaz is a man of God, and he has made a difference with his workers. How do you reach out to those who are empty? Use your speech to bless others. Secondly, keep your eye out for people with needs. Boaz, as he looks around the field, immediately recognizes that there is a young lady here who he does not know. A less compassionate landowner may not have even noticed her or might have thought, okay, she's a beggar. That has nothing to do with me. I'm going to talk to my workers. I'm going to get right to business. But that's not what Boaz does. His first order of business, he comes to the field. He sees this Moabite woman and he thinks, I need to take care of her. Look in verse 5. Then Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? Who does she belong to? She shouldn't be here by herself. Verse 6, the servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. With our world the way that it is, you can be guaranteed that everywhere you go, there are people who are empty. Someone around you is hurting. But we have to look for them. Do you see the hurting people when you come to church on Sunday morning? Not long ago, there was a man who was coming to our church, and I didn't know him. He kind of comes in and goes out just by himself, and so I got together with this man just to get to know him. And as I sat down with him and talked to him, he started to tell me what had been going on in his life. Well, his wife had left him, and tied up with that, he had lost access to all of his kids. He's got multiple children, and he doesn't ever get to see them. In fact, if things keep going as they're supposed to, he's not going to get to see them for years. And so he says, well, it's hard for me to come to church because there's all these families and all these kids, and I come in and I sit by myself, But I come because I'm hoping that God will see that and answer my prayers, and I'll get to see my kids again someday. And so here's this man, you know, sitting here in church week after week. He's broken. He's empty. Do you see the people that are here that are hurting on Sundays? Do you see the hurting people when you're at sporting events and restaurants and grocery stores? It's one of the things I love so much about Missions Conference. Doug, boy, he sees hurting people, right? And he showed it when he was here, too. In his stories, he did it. But he did it while he was here. He would just reach out to whoever was with him. What a great example. Well, that's what Boaz does. He looks out to his field. There's a hurting woman, and he cares for her. When you find someone who has needs, be generous. That's what Boaz does. Here, look at verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." Boaz is older than Ruth. When he asks the foreman about her, he calls her a young woman. And now that he goes and talks to her, he says, "My daughter." He's speaking to her. He's probably on a par with more in his age with Naomi than he is with Ruth. And he takes on a fatherly role here, providing for, taking care of this young girl who's in his field. He tells her she should keep coming back to his fields. He grants her protection. You notice he says, "I have commanded the servants not to touch you." See, in other fields, Ruth, even if she was allowed to stay, would have been mocked and jeered at by the crude young men working out there all day. In other fields, the harvesters may have physically beaten Ruth if she got too close behind them or if she got in their way in any way. It was a dangerous thing she was doing out there, gleaning in the fields. Ruth says, Boaz goes to Ruth and he says, "Ruth, you stay here. You keep coming to my fields and you'll be safe. We're going to treat you with kindness." More than that, he lets her drink from the worker's water supply. In that picture, I thought it was interesting. They're passing water. You're working in this hot sun all day. You've got to have water. My family went to a Husker game, the first game of the season this year, and we got up to our seats. It was only like in the 80s, but there was no wind, and we're just sitting in the sun. We're packed in there, and I quickly as I could got down to the stands and plunked down $20 for six waters. I would never do that in a normal situation, but we had to have water. Right? You got to have water to be able to work out in the sun. And Boaz comes to Ruth and he says, "Hey, you can drink from the water that's provided for my workers." Now, this is not the way things were supposed to work. In Israel, there was a hierarchy for who drew water for whom. Women drew water for men and foreigners drew water for Israelites. Ruth is at the bottom of the water drawing food chain. But clearly, she would be expected to bring her own water each day, if not bring water for everyone else. But Boaz said, "Hey, don't bring water when you come. You don't have to carry that back and forth. You just help yourself to the water I'll have for my workers. It'll be right there. You just have all you want whenever you want it." This simple provision would save Ruth much time and effort. He's thinking of what does she need and providing for her. You get a sense of how generous Boaz is being to her by how Ruth responds. This is unexpected. This is beyond what she could have dreamed. Verse 10, "Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?'" Ruth falls on her knees and then puts her face all the way down into the dirt in front of him and wonders what explanation there could be for Boaz being so kind to her. There's that humility again showing up in Ruth. How do you reach out to those who are empty? Use your words to bless others. Keep your eye out for people with needs. Be generous when you can. This fourth thing is probably the most important thing. Point them to the Lord. Point them to the Lord. Ruth had asked Boaz why he was being so extraordinarily kind. And so he gives her an explanation. "One of the low points of my working out in the secular world, I was in high school, I was working at Burger King. There was this girl who was mean to me from the time that I started working there at Burger King. She just yelled at me all the time. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just got the yelling introduction to Burger King. And this went on for months. And then all of a sudden, one day she decided that I was okay and we were friends. And soon after that transformation, I was still shocked with this. She came to me and she says, "You know, Mike, you are so nice. You're always smiling and friendly, even if people aren't nice to you." And she said, "What makes you different?" And I said, "I don't know. I guess I'm just happy." And then I went home and I said, "Lord, that was wrong to say that. I'm not just happy. It's the Lord that makes this difference." So Ruth here, she bows before Boaz. She says, "What is it that makes you so kind to me?" Look at what Boaz says. This is beautiful. Verse 11. Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. And how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Boaz says, "Ruth, I've heard what you've done. I heard how you left your homeland, your father and your mother, and you're taking care of Naomi." But, and he doesn't just say, "And I think that kind of loyal love should be rewarded." No, he directs Ruth's attention to the Lord. Boaz sees Ruth's sacrifice for Naomi, and he prays that God will richly reward her sacrifice. And there's this beautiful word picture at the end of verse 12. He says, "Ruth, you have taken refuge under the wings of God." It's as if Ruth is this little baby bird, and she's come to God for shelter, and he's reached out, and he's put his sheltering, protecting wing over her. He says, "Ruth, you come to God for shelter," and what's implied here? God is going to shelter you. He is trustworthy. You can count on him keeping you safe. Boaz sees a bigger picture here, doesn't he? God is caring for Ruth, and he is doing it through Boaz. Verse 13. Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant." This may be the first time in years that this has happened or since she's gotten here. She says, "Though I am not like one of your maidservants." Again, we see her humility. She says, "I'm lower than your lowest servant and you're being kind to me." Boaz isn't quite done being generous and kind to Ruth. In a little while, They go on for a bit, and then the field work comes to a break, and it's lunchtime. So Boaz sits down with his employees to eat, and as she should, Ruth sits off by herself. Did Ruth have food to bring as a lunch? Did she have a little lunch that she brought along? We don't know. But she sits off by herself. She's not really part of a crew. It would be wrong for her to sit with them. But look at how Boaz responds. We're impressed by Ruth's humility. Boaz shows humility too. That's the fifth point there. Be humble. At verse 14, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain. That word for served, he did with his own hands. He served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. Here's Boaz himself, the rich man, the man of prominence. He sees the Moabite woman sitting off by herself where she belongs and says, "Here, come over here. We're going to give you food to eat. Here's some of the roasted grain. Take the bread. We've got this delicious dip that goes with it. You have more than the bread. Dip it in the bread. Isn't this good?" And he gives her food and he provides for her. She has all that she wants to eat, which may be the first time that's happened for her in a long time, right? She eats all that she can and then she stuffs them in her pockets. By the way, that'll come up later. She has some left. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. We have to be like Boaz. We can't let our status ever get in the way of us reaching out to people. Right? If I stay away from someone because I view them as being lower than me, does that Christian thinking, did Christ stay away from me when I was lower than him? No. So Boaz says, "Look, there's no distinction. I'm going to invite this Moabite woman who's poor over and I'm going to feed her my own food. Treat her better than I treat my workers, almost." Boaz still is not done with his kindnesses. Look at verse 15. When she rose to glean, so Ruth goes off, Boaz talks to his servants. He says, "Hey, let her glean even among the sheaves and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her." Group Boaz grabs his workers. He says, look, guys, we're going to go above and beyond for Ruth. I want to bless her. So if she gets too close to you, where you'd usually say, hey, folks, you're standing on our ground. This is our area. Let her be there. Don't rebuke her. And also, when you're going along, she gets what we drop. Drop food on purpose. I want you to leave a bunch of food for Ruth. She commands. He commands. And they do it. They obey him. You can see that by what happens next, verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. And she beat out what she had gleaned. You have to take it from the long sticks and you have to beat the grain off. She's going to carry this back home. And what she had gleaned was about an ephah of barley. At the end of a long day, Ruth walks home with a ridiculous amount of grain. She has 30 to 50 pounds of threshed barley that she's hauling back home. That's enough grain to feed these two widows for a week, maybe more. In fact, if Ruth continues throughout the harvest to get this much grain every day, they're going to have enough food. They can eat the whole year until the next harvest if she can bring in this much food every day. This was way more than Ruth could have imagined that she was going to have when she left that morning. She probably was just hoping she'd have food for the next day to bring home. Verse 18, she took it up, which is no small task. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out, this is the leftovers, and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. My wife just told me something this week. We've been married for 15 years, and eventually sometimes she just realizes that I'm not going to figure things out, and so she just has to tell me. It's a good thing to do, wives. Just tell your husband, and then he'll know. Otherwise, he's never going to get it. My wife said, hey, you know, honey, if you want to love me, you want to surprise me, and you want me to know that I feel loved, do you know what you should do for me? And I said, well, what? And she says, bring me snacks. Just bring me some food sometimes. I'd love that. And I'm like, well, that's easy. I could probably pull that off, you know. Okay, well, so here's Ruth. She's coming home, and I imagine her just excited as she's coming home under the weight of this grain, thinking, boy, isn't Naomi going to be surprised when I come in the door. So she comes home. Naomi's like, what in the world? She has all this grain. And then she says, and I also have. She brings out roasted barley, you know, roasted grain. It's not just raw grain, but something she can eat. It's delicious. And Naomi responds well, too. How do you live in a world full of emptiness? If you're empty, trust in God and take action. He's going to take care of you. If you're full, reach out to those around you who are empty. There's lots of them. Naomi's going to provide a good example too. What do you do when God works on your behalf? Number one, express your gratitude to God and man. Verse 19, her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today? And where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. In other words, there's no way you would have this unless somebody took notice of you. This is not natural. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I worked today is Boaz. The narrator does this. It's like he slows out his story, uses a bunch of words, makes Boaz be at the end of the sentence. You know, You picture Naomi waiting. What's the name of the guy? Well, the name of the guy with whom I worked today is Boaz. Well, we know Boaz. Naomi knows Boaz. And so we come to verse 20. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. The question in verse 20, for those who study it, is, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead? Maybe she's talking about Boaz. Is she saying, may he be blessed of the Lord? Boaz has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead. Or maybe she's talking about the Lord. Maybe she's talking about Yahweh. Just a little bit ago, when she was standing in the streets coming home into the city, she was convinced that God was against her. She felt that God had withdrawn his kindness from her, that God had turned against her. I believe here she's talking about the Lord. She's saying, as you know, she sees the grain coming in. She says, Ruth, God hasn't withdrawn his kindness from us. But what was it that changed the way that she was thinking about the Lord's kindness? It was Boaz's kindness that changed how she viewed God and his kindness. wouldn't you like to bless someone in such a way that it changes the way they view about God and his love for them? We have this opportunity, as Boaz did, paid attention to a lady who was destitute. He helped her. He was generous to her. And then two women now go home and they're praising God for who's providing for them through him. Well, now Naomi is quick on her feet. I get a kick out of this. We are coming down to the end of the chapter, and let me get to the right place here. She is praising God. We're coming to verse 20. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives." Now, Naomi knew that close relatives, it's a particular word here used in the Hebrew, goel, that these close relatives, they have responsibilities to care for those who are related to them, particularly widows. They have responsibilities that go beyond just food. In fact, some of these responsibilities may imply marriage. And she says, "Ah, Boaz, huh? Well, Boaz is a close relative of ours." I think that that Naomi has schemes coming to her mind. You know how some of these ladies work. Ruth does not seem to be following Naomi's wavelength. She just got to Israel. She doesn't know the customs. She still seems to be excited about the food. Right? Verse 21. She says, "Hey, he's our close relative." Then you come to verse 21. Then Ruth the Moabite said, "Furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they've finished all the harvest." And so Ruth's like, "This is great. We have food." Naomi may be thinking beyond that. Anyway, we come to verse 22. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. 2 months go by. At the beginning of the chapter, these two widows were destitute and empty. They had no food and they had no man to take care of them. Now Ruth has trusted in God. God has provided through them through Boaz. Now they have food. Still they have no husbands, no possibility for carrying on the family name. Might God provide that for them as well? We live in a painful world. It's true. It's all around us. There's pain. But there also in our world is a God who is gracious, and we know him. If you're empty today in this world, follow Ruth's example. Trust in God. Take the action that he calls you to. Even if it's small, he can bless that. He'll direct your steps. If you're full today, and many of us are, whose steps is God directing to you? Let's pray. Oh God, we thank you for this story. It's so beautiful and wonderful. We thank you for how you, even behind the scenes, arrange things for the good of those who trust in you. You do that in this story. You've done it in our lives. We praise you for it and will forever. In Jesus' name, amen.